In a world in which movies struggle to find plot, Alan Adams of The Main Edge breaks it down for you in Pass the Popcorn. Now on Downtown with Rich Kimball.
Let's all go to the lobby.
Yes. Let's talk movies. Alan Adams from The Main Edge with us for Pass the Popcorn, brought to you by Bangor Mall Cinema 10. 557 Stillwater Avenue in Bangor, where they have a film for everybody in the family. Welcome.
Hello. How are you? Hello.
I'm great. How are you?
I'm great. Good
Busy
to be here.
Weekend?
Yeah. No. It was kind of nuts. I was lucky enough to spend a couple of days down on the island with the folks at Improv Acadia.
Yeah.
Help them
right.
close out their season. And then on Saturday night, our group, the Focus Group, we had a show in Winterport in association with the folks at Winterport Open Stage. And the days sandwiching that, I went to see a show at the University of Maine, and I went to see Penobscot Theater's production of Gaslight yesterday.
Wow.
Despite all of that, I still got to see a couple of movies, Rich.
And you've done, about like 15 improv shows in the last month?
It's been a lot. And our usual practice on Monday nights is not happening tonight because I think everybody could use a break.
I know you're going to talk about it more on Wednesday, but just as a little teaser, how is our friend Dennis in Gaslight?
He's really good. Like, I mean, I'm sure you're stunned to hear this, but he's really good. Like, it's a fantastic part for him. And, it's just really nice to see him on that stage again.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, 'cause that's where we met.
Right.
You know what I mean? And it's just like, you know, to just see him, doing what he does. And, I feel like he hasn't necessarily had the opportunity to do as much stage work as I think he would like. Mm. And so it was really great to see him given something that he could really dig into in a way that is, it's just inimitably Dennis Price. And it was just a hoot. But the whole show, and we'll talk about it at greater length on Wednesday. But it's a real delight. Like I'm really excited for people to get a chance to see this.
And Dennis rubbing elbows with friends of Downtown too. He posted a picture Saturday that Katie Azelton was there at the premiere Saturday night.
Yeah, I saw that. Her niece is Elizabeth is in the show,
right?
And is also very, very good. Like it's a dynamite cast. The script hasn't necessarily aged super well in some ways, They've embraced that in a way that makes it even. I'm gonna go out and, like, I'm more entertained by what I saw than anything that I can imagine it being, you know, in its heyday. Like, it was just
and only Dennis would post a picture of Katie Azelton. League fans will appreciate it and say, Chalupa Batman's mother came to the show.
Yeah, Chalupa Batman's mom. That's how you do. That's how you do when you're Dennis Price.
Darn right. Well, let's talk movies. It was sequel weekend, huh?
Yeah, it was kind of weird, right? Like, I got out to see Maleficent, Mistress of Evil, and Zombieland Double Tap. It's interesting because both of these sequels are a little late. Maleficent came, the first Maleficent movie came out in 2014. The first Zombieland came out all the way back in 2009. Like, this is
wow.
This is like a decade late sequel. So it's just like, it's just really interesting to sort of see people revisiting these sorts of properties, with so much, you know, sort of time, behind them. And again, we know that the Hollywood landscape is more or less exclusively populated by sequels and reboots and franchises and whatnot. And so, it makes sense. These were both movies that that did very well at the box office. So it only stands to reason that they would get sequels. The weird part is just how long it took for the sequels to arrive. Which one would you like to talk about first?
Let's talk about Maleficent.
Okay. Yeah, it's interesting. Here's the thing. This is the big takeaway I have from Maleficent, Mistress of Evil. There's a surprising lack of Maleficent in a movie titled Maleficent, Mistress of Evil. it's funny. You really do get the vibe that that Angelina Jolie was only available for like 10 days. And so they just filmed as much as they could. And then they just filled in the rest with the rest of the characters from the story. For those who are unfamiliar, Maleficent was sort of a reimagining slash prequel to the Sleeping Beauty story, This sequel removes us even farther from that original source material. And we have basically Queen Aurora. She's the queen now, played by Elle Fanning. The goddaughter, raised by Maleficent, is now the Queen of the Moors, which is the fairyland with all the magical creatures and whatnot. And in the nearby kingdom of, what the heck is it called? Ulstead? Ulstead, I think. The Prince Philip, has decided that he's in love with Aurora and they're going to get married. Not only because they love each other, it'll be a union of two people and of two kingdoms. And so so that's the plan. But there's still a lot of bad feeling towards Maleficent because, you know, she's like, you know, used her dark magic against the people of the kingdom on numerous occasions. And, you know, there's legend has it that she's not a very nice fairy. We'll go with fairy. Philip's parents, including the not at all into this Queen Ingrid, not Ingrid, Ingrid.
Breath. Okay.
Played by Michelle Pfeiffer, invites Maleficent to come join them for a sort of a meet the parents kind of dinner. Well, that goes about as well as you could expect. And the next thing you know, Maleficent's using her magic and in menacing ways and busting out, flying out through a window and generally just being really angry at people. and is she's accused of cursing the king and all that sort of nonsense. Before she wanders off and discovers a whole weird, like, underground cave filled with other dark fairies, just like her, with the horns and the wings and whatnot. And all the while, we have Aurora and Philip planning their wedding all the same, despite the fact that the king is in a never-ending dreamless sleep. And the queen is apparently building an army in order to take the Moors by force. And yeah, and then things sort of develop from there. I could honestly go through some more of the plot with you, but it doesn't matter. Like, none of the plot really makes any sense. Like, what happens, why it happens, the decisions people make, none of it makes any sense. and yeah, and that's really the view from 20,000 feet as far as Maleficent is concerned. It's a fine looking movie. It gets a little overly CGI-y at times, but you know, there's some really great visual moments and whatnot. And, you know, it's a Disney movie, so they know how to make stuff look good. But it just doesn't. I don't know. There's just not much there. Like, there's not really a whole lot of soul to it. Angelina Jolie could not be less interested in what's going on. The only person less interested in being in this movie is Michelle Pfeiffer, who, you know, occasionally leans into some, you know, sort of, scenery chewing evil, but for the most part is just like, just generally kind of bored. and I sympathize because that's kind of where I was at I was watching the movie. I was just kind of bored. You know, and there's this big, you know, there's some big fight scenes and a bunch of like jammed in, like made up lore to sort of do some world building or whatever. But it's just, I don't know. It feels like it's trying too hard, and it feels like nothing so much as, well, the first one made $300 million. So let's make another one. And that's pretty much where we land. And that's it's too bad. I will say there were some young people at the screening that I saw. This is not a movie for young people. I know it's Disney inspired and all that stuff, but it gets pretty intense in a couple of places, and I'm not necessarily sure that the real wee ones are ready for something like this. I mean, obviously your mileage may vary, parental discretion and all that. You know, if I had a kindergartner in my life, I probably wouldn't take him to see this movie. Certainly not in the theater. Like, give him a chance to be somewhere safe. But you know, and I say that, and there was a kid who was just a couple years older than that sitting next to me, who was just right out straight loving every moment of it. Okay. So again, like, to each their own. I prefer to err on the side of, you know, I prefer to watch a good movie.
All right. Well, did you get to see one in Zombieland Double Tap?
Well, here's the thing.
Okay.
Full disclosure, like, it was going to be hard for this movie to not appeal to me.
Yeah.
Because I loved the first
Me
one.
Me too.
I loved the first one. They brought a lot of that same energy to the sequel. And granted, like, it's not as good as that first movie. I think the biggest difference being there was almost an element of surprise to the first one, just in terms of its treatment of zombies, its treatment of its characters, that sort of thing. It just wasn't really what we had seen before in terms of the whole zomcom subgenre. We've had 10 years to get really sick of zombies.
That's true.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, it's just been like 2009 was when the original movie came out, and it was just that sort of like pop culture, like the zombie zeitgeist was really like peaking right at that time, you know, and it was just like zombies were everywhere. And then, you know, we kind of just got a little oversaturated. And so that's probably why this movie didn't come out, you know, 5 or 6 years ago. That plus literally everyone involved is wildly famous and incredibly busy. And so for them to sort of find the time to bring everyone back together, and they bring everyone back together. It's not just the core cast. The director, Ruben Fleischer, is back. The two original screenwriters are back. I think they brought in one other person. I think it might have been just for a polish. But yeah, Ruben Fleischer, who the original Zombieland was his first like feature film.
Well, and I was listening to Woody Harrelson on Mark Maron's podcast over the weekend, and he was saying he wouldn't do it. They sent him scripts for years and years and years, and he didn't think any of them were right. And he said, you need to go get the original guys.
Yeah.
They're the ones who understand what worked about that. And I think it was his insistence that they get the original writer and director if he was ever going to be involved.
Yeah, and it makes total sense, because it was such a unique sort of a film. If you want to have any chance of recapturing any of that, like, you need to have the same, you know, sort of pieces in place. I think they did a really great job of that. It's a real-time sequel, so it's 10 years later. And the group is still together. You've got Woody Harrelson as Tallahassee, Jesse Eisenberg as Columbus. He's also our narrator. Emma Stone as Wichita, and Abigail Breslin as Little Rock. And they're still together. They're still killing zombies. They've formed their weird little family unit, and they've moved into the White House you know, they were like, you know, like, we should have a sort of permanent base of operations.
Sure.
Let's live in the White House. Columbus and Wichita are a couple now. Tallahassee has sort of assumed a father figure role for young Little Rock, but Little Rock, you know, she's a teenage girl, like, and she's never really had friends her own age, because, again, zombie apocalypse.
Yeah.
And so she's really itchy to kind of get out and see who else is out there. Tallahassee, of course, is adamantly against it. Meanwhile, Columbus and Wichita, their relationship has hit a bit of a rut, and Columbus, totally misreading the situation, takes a wild swing that, it results in him receiving a very terse note. And Wichita and Little Rock driving away and leaving and heading off into the zombie land, as it were. We get them. They kind of go off on their own thing. Columbus and Tallahassee are left. Columbus spends about a month moping, and then they encounter another survivor, a young woman named Madison, played by Zoe Deutsch.
That's our friend Leah Thompson's daughter.
Yeah, and she's wonderful. They have a bit of a romantic encounter. when Wichita comes back, now we have a love triangle, which is, you know, how you manage to get a love triangle, and, you know, when there's like 15 people left in the world. But there you go. Meanwhile, Little Rock has encountered a young hippie type named Berkeley, because of course he's named Berkeley, who has convinced her that he wants to take her to this utopian sort of place filled with young people protected from the zombies called Babylon. And so she's like, yeah. But she's always wanted to see Graceland, because Tallahassee talks about Graceland. And so there's a side trip to Graceland. That's when the rest of the gang tries to track her down there. Which is where they meet at a particularly garish casino. They meet Reno, played by Rosario Dawson, as well as Albuquerque and Flagstaff, two people who bear striking resemblances to Tallahassee and Columbus, played by, and this it's hilarious, by Luke Wilson and Thomas Middleditch. And then we, uh, you know, they make their way to Babylon. They get pursued, and well, zombies show up. They're going to be some zombies. I don't think I'm spoiling anything by saying yes, there will be zombies. And in this world, over the course of the 10 years, a certain breed of zombie has sort of started evolving, like smarter, stronger, faster, etc., tougher to kill. So we get some pretty spectacular and incredibly graphic zombie murdering going on. And that's and that's what I'm here for. I'm here for jokes, and I'm here for graphic zombie kills.
Any great cameos like the last one? Don't give anything away.
Well, I will tell you, there is a fantastic mid-credits scene involving someone who appeared in the first movie. That's all I'm going to say. Just stay.
Yeah.
Just do not forget to stay, because it will be well worth your while.
Excellent.
Yeah, it's a great time. Everyone involved clearly enjoys what they're doing. Like, they're really invested. And when you have people, this many talented people enjoying themselves, like, it's impossible not to enjoy yourself watching this movie. They're doing such a wonderful, wonderful job. They're so engaged with one another. It gets a little hokey at times, but that's okay. And, you know, like I said, it's funny, it's gross. And really, what else do you want from a movie called Zombieland other than funny and gross?
Two of my favorite things.
Right?
Looking forward to it. Thank you, Alan.
My pleasure.
Alan Adams of The Main Edge talking movies on Pass the Popcorn. Alan back with us on Wednesday afternoons.